It's Wednesday, September 30th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. I'm still reeling from the mainstream media exposure that we're getting from our Normal National Conference in particular, and the topic of legalizing marijuana in general. Seems like you can't turn to a newsstand or a newspaper these days without seeing something about legalization. Of course, we talked about the Fortune magazine article. It's 7,500 words, 12 pages in the magazine and on the cover, all about legalization. And then I told you yesterday about Marie Claire magazine, the women's magazine for young women, young professionals, hairstyles and dating advice and so on, profiling the stiletto stoners, young, successful professional women who prefer marijuana over martinis. By the way, if you buy that copy of Marie Claire, you also get an excellent picture of Ellen Page and Drew Barrymore kissing. So you could add that to the value of the magazine, I suppose. But also, more local magazines are coming out with information about the people's need and want to legalize marijuana. Coming up in the hemp headlines, I'll tell you about a story in Texas Monthly magazine. Also, the Westword, the blog for Denver, Colorado, has profiled Rob and Jessica Corey, Republican parents for marijuana, who spoke at our Normal National Conference on the subject. So everywhere you look, marijuana legalization is in vogue. Now, I am getting ready to head off to my next trip here on the Puff Puff Pass Tour. I'm off to Madison, Wisconsin tomorrow early in the morning. And Friday, I'm going to take a side trip off to Lambeau Field in Green Bay, Wisconsin for my personal edification. This is something I've been dreaming about since I was a kid. I'm a diehard Green Bay Packers fan, and I can't wait to get to Lambeau Field. Of course, the business reason for the trip is the Great Midwest Harvest Festival taking place Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I'll be participating on Saturday and Sunday, including the big parade in Madison. So anybody in that area who'd like to meet, just join me up at the Great Midwest Harvest Fest. Maybe we'll head back to the hotel room and we can have some discussion and other social celebrations. Also, following the trip to Madison, Wisconsin, I'll then be flying to Orlando, Florida next week. Wednesday, October 7th, I'll be speaking at the University of Central Florida. That's one of the strongest college chapters we've got in the Normal Network. So anybody in the Central Florida area who'd like to meet, send me an email at stash@normal.org. Of course, all of this traveling is going to put a bit of a dent in my regular Stash podcasting schedule. You're getting today's podcast, but you won't have a podcast on Thursday or Friday since I'll be busy. Saturday, Normal Show Live will come to you from the Great Midwest Harvest Fest at 6 p.m. Pacific, unless I need to move it to an earlier time based on the events. I'll know more once I get to Wisconsin. Then next week, the podcast will be on Monday and Friday, since Tuesday and Thursday I'll be traveling and Wednesday I'll be speaking. So two podcasts this week, two podcasts next week. And once I return on October 12th, we'll begin the 5-day-a-week podcasting schedule. So hold on tight. The travels are almost over.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care.
It's 420 somewhere.
Time now to check our normal calendar of events, which you can find at norml.org/calendar. I already mentioned the Great Midwest Harvest Festival taking place in Madison, Wisconsin, Thursday through Sunday. But also on Thursday, October 1st, Philly Normal will be holding their open meeting at the A Space at 4722 Baltimore Avenue in Philadelphia. For more information, check out phillynormal.org. Friday, North Ohio Normal begins their Harvest Fest, which will be at the Chippewas Valley Campground, 8809 Lake Road in Seville, Ohio. Check out northohio.normal.net for more information. Kansas City also is having their Oktoberfest at the Uptown Theater. Kansas City Normal will be there, and this will be at 3700 Broadway Street, number 210 in Kansas City, Missouri. Check out kcnormal.org for more information. Also, Friday night, Cannabis Common Sense hits the airwaves on cable access in selected cities, as well as streaming live on the internet at ustream.tv. For more information, check out ustream.tv/channel/cannabis-common-sense. On Saturday, October 3rd, Kansas City Normal moves to the Lakeside Mini-Fest that will be taking place at 4200 East 119th Street in Kansas City, Missouri, with bands and camping. For more information, check out kcnormal.org. And rounding out the weekend on Sunday, October 4th, there will be a Nebraska Normal open meeting in Omaha, Nebraska. Check out normalnebraska.org for more details. It's a normal shout-out. Our shout-outs this week go out to Madison, Wisconsin and Green Bay, Wisconsin, as mentioned earlier, and to the folks in Central Florida around the Orlando area. I'll be there, and my times and dates are listed on the normal calendar of events at norml.org/calendar. So if you'd like to meet up to hear me speak or just to talk, check out the calendar and send me an email at stash@normal.org. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we begin with your hemp headlines, including a look at Santa Barbara, California, and their city's look at marijuana dispensaries. I'll point out how silly it is to restrict dispensaries when we don't have the same rules for liquor stores or pharmacies. In our continuing look at the mainstream media's rejection of the marijuana legalization message, we highlight a 30-minute political infomercial that is playing in 7 southern states that is far more incendiary and controversial than medical marijuana could ever be. And we round out the headlines by taking a look at the magazine Texas Monthly and its look at Texas's role in marijuana re-legalization. For our Daily Toker Tunes brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, Tam still has this week and next week off while I'm traveling around the country, and I get to bring to you some of the music I've picked up during my travels. Today we feature a band called Hannah's Field and their song Weed and Meditation. Then in our Cannabis Conversations, we bring you special exclusive live audio from the Normal National Conference in San Francisco, California, and a keynote speech by Stephen D'Angelo, the CEO of Harborside Health Centers, the 3-chain medical marijuana dispensary clinics in California. Stephen has some very visionary and somewhat controversial thoughts on how we re-legalize marijuana. All that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Santa Barbara mulls limits on medical marijuana dispensaries. From the Santa Barbara News Hawk. Santa Barbara residents showed up in force once again for an ordinance committee meeting Tuesday regarding the city's marijuana dispensaries. During 90 minutes of public comment, residents discussed ideas for revising the city ordinance, as well as opinions on the existence of dispensaries in Santa Barbara. Misusing marijuana is a big concern among residents, but there isn't much information available on how big a role dispensaries play in recreational and underage marijuana use. Well, I doubt dispensaries have more of a role in underage consumption than do the teenage marijuana dealers in every school in the country. The dispensaries, at least, check an ID. As for the recreational use, the dispensaries require a doctor's recommendation, so that point needs to be taken up with doctors, not dispensaries that are following the law. Besides, just what the hell is misuse of marijuana anyway? If you have a headache and you smoke pot and it makes you feel good, is that medicinal or recreational? Now let's say you don't have a headache and you just smoke pot to feel good. Is that misuse? Somehow, it is only okay to smoke pot to feel good if you felt bad before smoking it? Why do we have such a puritanical need to make sure people aren't experiencing joy without first feeling pain? The use of medicinal marijuana isn't recognized in the public school system, and police have both formally and informally cited many students for possession or use on campus, according to Armando Martel of the Santa Barbara Police Department. The Santa Barbara school districts have reported 178 suspensions from controlled substances, most from marijuana. Superintendent Brian Sarvis told the committee Tuesday that one student told him the substance was so easy to get that it may as well be in the school vending machines, adding that Martel doesn't think those cases have been tracked back to dispensaries. Before dispensaries, around 85% of high school seniors say marijuana is easy or fairly easy to get. Most can get it within the day, many within the hour. After the dispensaries, around 85% of high school seniors still say it's easy to acquire. Medical marijuana has nothing to do with teen access. Teen access is rampant because of marijuana prohibition. David Hughes spoke on behalf of the Housing Authority of the City of Santa Barbara and said the group requests a prohibition of dispensaries near residential zones and special needs facilities, such as sober living complexes. State law bans smoking medical marijuana within 1,000 feet of a school, recreation center, or youth center. Although dispensaries don't allow smoking or consuming on-site, there's an anomaly in enforcement if the locations are within that 1,000-foot boundary, as many are, he said. Residents also have expressed concern with dispensaries near residential areas, especially the pending dispensary at Paseo Chapala. I can't count the number of times I've read about the public's concern about marijuana dispensaries in their neighborhoods, especially around schools. What amuses me is that the public seems so much less concerned about liquor stores in these same areas. I went and looked on Google Earth and mapped out 84 different liquor stores that I could find with Santa Barbara, California addresses, and I also mapped out the location of every school in the Santa Barbara School District and found no less than 10 elementary, preschool, childcares, junior highs, or high schools within a 1,000-foot radius of one, sometimes two, liquor stores and dispensaries. So why are we not worried about liquor stores and pharmacies, but we're suddenly worried about medical marijuana dispensaries? They're all checking IDs. They're all adults only. The only difference is the medical marijuana, unlike liquor or pharmaceuticals, won't kill a single kid. 30-second ad discussing medical marijuana? Unthinkable. 30-minute ad asking for the president's birth certificate? Sure! Okay, before anyone slams me for context, let's note up front that the medical marijuana ads produced by Marijuana Policy Project were rejected for air on stations in California and New York. And the infomercial named in the story below is airing on stations in the South that had nothing to do with the medical marijuana ads. So, I am painting with a broad what-the-fuck brush on all television media here. Got it? That said, after this next story, I don't want to ever read this lame excuse as submitted by a stasher from a WABC official that rejected one of the MPP medical marijuana ads. As a broadcaster licensed by the government, if we accept advertising from one side of an issue, we are required to accept advertising from the opposing side, even if that advertising is false, hate-filled, or knowingly dishonest. We cannot refuse the ad because the law does not require it to be truthful. The only way ABC can prevent putting misleading issue-oriented advertising on the air is to refuse to air any of it. Please note, in doing so, WABC loses the potential revenue from both sides of these issues. So in refusing the ads, WABC loses money. But the only option ABC has is to air all ads, including the misleading and deceitful ones, or air none of them. All right, first of all, that's not entirely true because stations can accept issue-oriented ads all the time, and they are not required to air opposing sides. This is something they used to call the fairness doctrine in broadcasting. It no longer exists since, oh, about the Reagan era. But aside from that, a TV station can't air a 30-second medical marijuana ad because there's no way of guaranteeing that the ad isn't false, hate-filled, or knowingly dishonest? Okay, keep that in mind as I tell you about this 30-minute infomercial from the so-called birthers that is airing in 7 southern states. From tpmmuckraker.com. A new birther infomercial running on a CBS affiliate in Texas and elsewhere around the country tells viewers a "Got a birth certificate" bumper sticker can be theirs for the low price of $30. For a $30 contribution, viewers also get a fax sent in their name to the 50 state attorneys general and Attorney General Eric Holder, demanding that President Obama produce his real birth certificate. The infomercial promises late-night viewers a, quote, special look at where Barack Hussein Obama was really born. Today, you could join hundreds of thousands of other Americans and force President Obama to produce his birth certificate, end quote. A logo on the screen during the infomercial features the outlines of the United States, the state of Hawaii, and the continent of Africa, with the red, white, and blue colored words, quote, "Where was President Obama born?" end quote. That's right. If you're selling anything from the sham wow to a subliminally racist paranoid conspiracy theory that the president is a foreign-born Manchurian candidate, there's a half hour worth of cheap infomercial time just waiting for you. But if you want to offer 30 seconds of people in pain asking not to be arrested for using a plant to gain relief, you can take that crazy issue-oriented advertising somewhere else. Texas Monthly. Texas Highways calls for legalization in the Lone Star State. Cliff Duvall from our new normal of Waco called to tell me I just had to see this new article on the cover of Texas Monthly magazine. When Texas is calling for legalization, you know we're winning. Texas Monthly. In the early years of the 20th century, as they poured across the border into Texas, Mexican immigrants brought with them a familiar and cheap intoxicant, cannabis, which they called marijuana. Perhaps because they were young, predominantly male, and away from home, strong correlates of troublesome behavior, they were seen as lacking appropriate inhibition, especially when they came to town on weekends. Cerveza may have been more culpable, but cannabis made an easier target. In 1914, after a melee allegedly involving a marijuana smoker, the El Paso city government passed what is believed to have been the first law banning a drug that had been legally and widely used for at least 5,000 years. Other cities and states quickly followed suit. Before long, marijuana was forbidden everywhere, and its use was often harshly punished. It's ironic, then, that nearly a century after it fired the first shot in the war on weed, the Sun City has been flirting with a ceasefire. In January, besieged by drug wars in Mexico that killed more than 5,600 people in 2008, almost a third in neighboring Ciudad Juarez alone, the El Paso City Council unanimously approved City Representative Beto O'Rourke's motion that the federal government hold an open and honest debate about legalizing all narcotics in the United States. Mayor John Cook vetoed that recommendation, saying, quote, "We would be the laughingstock of the country for having something like this on the books," end quote. The incident drew national attention and some criticism, but it sparked the kind of serious conversation O'Rourke was seeking. Quote, "No one is laughing about it," he says. "It's not funny that 1,600 people died in our sister city in the course of 1 year in the most brutal fashion imaginable. We've had waves of violence before, but it took events of this magnitude to convince everyone that something is deeply wrong here, that we are a part of the problem, and we can do something to fix it. It's the demand that's fueling this war. If our drug laws were different, I will absolutely guarantee you that our body count would be different." End quote.
I'm a normal guy. I like the outdoors. I work a 9-to-5. And I use marijuana recreationally and responsibly in the privacy of my own home. Recently, I became one of the 20 million Americans who have been arrested for a marijuana-related offense. Now I face jail time and my future is in jeopardy. But couldn't police resources have been spent more wisely? After all, 90% of all marijuana-related arrests are for simple possession. Is this normal?
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling while promoting the message of reform. To donate your song for possible use on the stash, enter it in the next Marijuana Music Awards contest today. Hannah's Field is a group that I met at the Emerald Empire Hemp Fest this summer in Eugene, Oregon. I think I'd met them before then as well, but I didn't recall that at the time. I was really impressed with how much music this duo puts out. While Hannah plays the acoustic guitar and sings, Andy is often playing drums and guitar simultaneously. Hannah runs her guitar through some effects boxes that provide a very diverse set of sounds from one instrument. The duo once called Portland, Oregon their home, but have since moved on to Connecticut. You can check them out at their website, hannahsgroove.com. Today's song is called Weeded Meditation, and it comes from their Live at Javapalooza CD. This is Hannah's Field.
Weeded meditation, weeded meditation, lifts me to love's vibration, yeah. Weeded meditation, weed and meditation, just like transformation, yeah. He may drink a pint of ale and she may sing a song. They may climb a Mount Rainier, it makes them feel life strong. She may pray then cry for days, it makes her feel life whole. Whatever reaches your soul, a weed and meditation, weed and meditation. This meets love's vibration, yeah. Weed and meditation, weed and meditation. Just high transformation, yeah. He may surf and fly the waves, and she may belly dance. They may breathe the breath of fire, it puts them in a trance. She may plant the garden of herbs to feel the precious earth. Whatever creates your life's worth. Weed and meditation, weed and meditation. Lifts me to love's vibration, yeah. Weed and meditation, weed and meditation. Just high transformation, yeah. Meditation, weed and meditation. Lifts me to love's vibration, yeah. Weed and meditation, weed and meditation. Just like a transformation, yeah. Weed and meditation, weed and meditation. Lifts me to love's vibration, yeah. Weed and meditation, weed and meditation. Just a transformation, yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Hey, man.
On the road again.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Friends, it's time we legalize the responsible use of marijuana and stop treating marijuana smokers like criminals. We're destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of good, hardworking Americans every year in this country for no good reason. There's absolutely nothing wrong with smoking pot. For more information on how you can help legalize marijuana, please contact Normal at NORML.org.
The most devastating effect of the war on marijuana is that it is a war on everyday people like you and me. All week we speak to the doctors, scientists, celebrities, and politicians who make up the professionals fighting for cannabis liberty, but we never forget about the tens of millions who use cannabis, the millions who need medical access to cannabis, the hundreds of thousands arrested every year for cannabis, and tens of thousands imprisoned under our marijuana laws. At Normal, we are the Cannabis Consumers Lobby, and we take this opportunity to share the experiences of our cannabis community. We're bringing you today a keynote speech from Stephen D'Angelo, who's the CEO of the Harborside Health Centers in California, a leading chain of medical marijuana dispensaries. We didn't get the recording started from the very beginning of the speech, but you haven't missed much. As we pick up on this, Stephen's explaining why marijuana legalization is a tough subject to broach with some parents and some members of the public. While we think of it as the sunshine and roses that will happen after legalization, the average American sees all sorts of scary scenarios that we as reformers need to address. This is Stephen D'Angelo picking up from the middle of his keynote speech. This is Stephen D'Angelo, and we're picking up from just about the beginning of his keynote speech.
Legalization means that the Mexican cartels are going to be invited into their suburban neighborhoods to set up shop on the corners and start slinging weed to kids on their way to school. Others, more sophisticated, worry that when their children go into a 7-Eleven, they will not only have to walk past the booze and the tobacco, but they'll also have to walk past the weed. They're concerned that they'll open up the latest issue of Vibe or Rolling Stone and find a 2-page glossy ad in the manner of Anheuser-Busch. These citizens are concerned they don't want to see cannabis companies in the model of R.J. Reynolds spending 20 times as much on advertising as they do on the product, spending 20 times as much on creating a market as they do on producing the product. And these millions are the ones that we must persuade if we're to be victorious. They're already halfway there. They're comfortable with medical, and they're comfortable with decriminalization. They know that cannabis can be an okay thing, but they're afraid that it can hurt them or their kids if it's not handled properly. The latest issue of Fortune magazine had an incredible article called "Is Pot Legal Already?" And there's some passages in there that very accurately describe these fears, and bear with me as I read a couple of them. Marijuana activists thought they were close to legalization once before. From 1973 to 1978, activists won decriminalization in 11 states. In 1977, President Jimmy Carter endorsed a federal decriminalization bill. But the bill went nowhere, and soon the movement was all but obliterated by the return swing of the cultural pendulum, now known as the Reagan Revolution. There would be no new state or federal marijuana reforms for the next 16 years. The author goes on to say, "Medical marijuana is clearly the crowning factor making things different this time. Not only is it changing perceptions of the drug, but it has also given legalization advocates in California a first ever opportunity to devise and showcase a business prototype. They've been afforded the chance, let me underline, the chance to show a skeptical public that a safe, seemly, and responsible system for distributing marijuana is possible. If they succeed, they'll convince the fence sitters, the 24, 25, 30%, and lead the way to a nationwide metamorphosis. If they fail, the backlash will be savage. If communities cannot adequately regulate the dispensaries, they'll descend into unsightly, youth-seducing, crime-ridden playgrounds for gangbangers. And this flirtation with legalization will conclude the way the last one did, with a swift and merciless swing of the pendulum." I can tell you, as one of the guys with his head on the chopping block, I have great concern about the swings of that pendulum. I think the Fortune analysis is spot on. I think it's spot backed up by multiple public opinion polls over the years. I think it's clear at this point, to me anyhow, that the task of our movement should be to develop and promote positive models of cannabis distribution. We must demonstrate to our fellow citizens that we are worthy of the trust that we're asking for. I'm happy to report that that process of building trust has already begun in California. 4 years ago, Oakland became the first city in California. It's hard to believe, I know, it passed in 1996, but it was only 4 years ago that Oakland became the first city in California to license and regulate medical cannabis dispensaries. Those regulations were a huge success. They have now been emulated statewide by jurisdictions everywhere. As that regulation has spread, the spreading regulation has tended to replace the shady dealing and amateurism of the early days of the industry. We're now seeing an increasing number of competent, reputable, professional cannabis dispensaries statewide as a result of those regulations, I think. So what can we do as a movement to carry that process forward? What can we do to ensure that the models of cannabis distribution that we put forward are good ones, that they're positive ones? First and foremost, I think we have to engage and put the power and the resources of our movement behind demanding the effective licensing and regulation of medical cannabis dispensaries. Most of the damage of the early post-215 days, most of the PR damage that was done, was due to the reluctance of jurisdictions to explicitly license and regulate medical cannabis dispensaries. Instead, medical cannabis dispensaries were consigned to a legal gray area, with the predictable result that people who are comfortable operating in the shadows were attracted to the industry. Today, largely because of those problems in the early days, 50% of California jurisdictions still absolutely prohibit medical cannabis dispensaries, and many more unnecessarily restrict their operations. We must go into every single last one of those jurisdictions, large and small. We must go in there and do the patient, sustained, step-by-step, painstaking political footwork that it will take to move them from prohibition to regulation. Second, and I know there's some debate on this issue. Second, I think we need to embrace the not-for-profit community service model of cannabis distribution that's been pioneered in California. If you boil down the fears of our swing voters, it boils down to them not wanting us as a society to make the same mistakes with cannabis that we made with alcohol and tobacco. Glamorization, excessive ads driving inappropriate use, profit-making corporations enticing kids into lifetime dependency. Third thing we need to do to move this positive model forward. We must avoid the temptation at this point, at this incredibly exciting time of history when so much seems possible. We must avoid the temptation to overplay our hand. We must be careful not to move these swing voters who we have halfway convinced to our position too quickly, too far out of their comfort zone. What have we learned in all of the electoral campaigns that we've fought? We have learned that in a heated electoral campaign, you must be prepared to lose support. We're not going to win an election if we go into it with 46% of the vote. And I'm sorry to say, I don't think we're going to go into an election with 56% of the vote and win either. Not only do legalization initiatives at this time are not only are they likely to fail, they may even do damage if they win. Without effective and robust regulations on the distribution of cannabis, legalization initiatives are likely to manifest the worst fears of our swing voters. A legal but unregulated market would generate the same kind of out-of-control free-for-all that we saw in the post-215 era in California. A mess would be created, and the mess would probably be large enough to start that pendulum swinging back in the other direction. And like Fortune predicted, that backlash will be savage. I've seen it once before. I don't want to see it again. Fourth, as we move medical cannabis out of California and out of Colorado and out of the other states where it has begun to burst forth, we must, as a movement, ensure that the medical cannabis legislation that we sponsor and pass actually enables the creation of an effective distribution system. All too often, we've traded easy victory for laws that don't really protect us. All too often, we've accepted restrictions on doctors' ability to write recommendations, which is the first step to creating a market. All too often, we've accepted severe restrictions on patient cultivation and the right to collective gardens, which are the first steps in creating sufficient supply, another prerequisite of an effective marketplace. And all too often, we've accepted bans and restrictions on the right of patients to trade and distribute medicine amongst themselves, with obvious implications for developing a positive model of cannabis distribution. These self-defeating half-steps must end. If we accept these kind of restrictions, we'll never be able to place a positive image of cannabis distribution in front of our fellow citizens. We will never have the opportunity to persuade them or win them over. We'll blow it. Instead, we must push for the most inclusive possible definitions that doctors can recommend for. Like any other medicine, if a doctor thinks that it would be effective for his or her patient, then that doctor should be able to recommend it. Instead, we must ensure that patient cultivation is sufficient to sustain distribution to all the patients who need medicine. Instead, we need to make sure that collective gardens exist so that patients can take advantage of efficiencies of scale and we can have abundant and affordable medicine in our dispensaries. In short, we must make certain that the laws that we as a movement pass actually provide patients with legal, safe, and affordable access to the medicine that they need. And that means a well-regulated dispensary system. Okay, so what about legalization? What about non-patients? What about people who don't even want to become patients? More importantly, what about everybody who's still in prison? Do we leave the millions out in the cold? Well, let me tell you, it's my unshakable belief that cannabis is a sacred plant and that everyone on this planet has a right to it, and that no person or organization has the right to take that away from us, and that our fight will not be done until that right is enshrined into law. But I'll tell you this. I've been in this movement for almost 4 decades, and I know only too well from personal bitter experience that for too long, for most of that time, we made little to no progress until we started fighting for the right to medical cannabis. We're not going to legalize cannabis for everybody by repeating the same arguments. We must develop new strategies. We can't expect different results if we repeat the same methods. So how do we build on our current success? How do we extend the access to medical cannabis to all cannabis consumers? How do we extend legal protection from the hundreds of thousands who have it now to the tens of millions who still need it? Well, imagine, fast forward. Imagine that the movement hears and heeds the call that I'm making today, and that we really do put our energy behind creating effective models of cannabis distribution. 6 or 7 years from now, robust medical cannabis laws will have created millions of legal cannabis consumers all across the country. Almost every American will have a friend or a relative or a coworker who has a medical cannabis recommendation. And those citizens will know that cannabis hasn't harmed their friends or their relatives, and that indeed it's probably done them a whole lot of good. They'll know this from firsthand experience. Fears will have been allayed and replaced with acceptance. Scientific research will march on and continue to establish the efficacy of medical cannabis, not just for grave illnesses, but for everyday ailments as well. And across the nation, thousands of not-for-profit community service medical cannabis dispensaries will have created a positive model of cannabis distribution. There will be no reefer in the 7-Elevens. Kids will not be subject to the machinations of a created market. Communities everywhere will be benefiting from taxes, donations, and services. In short, a safe, seemly, and reliable distribution system will already be in existence.
Sounds good, doesn't it? Yeah. Well, it's then that we reinvigorate our call for science, for a science-based cannabis policy. And what does science tell us? Science tells us most over-the-counter drugs and pharmacies are far more dangerous than cannabis is. Science tells us that cannabis is the safest, therapeutically active substance known to mankind. Science teaches us that cannabis should not be subject to restrictions any greater than over-the-counter drugs sold in pharmacies every day. Now, you know, of course, that's the same argument we've been making for years. But conditions will have changed. With a well-regulated network of medical cannabis dispensaries in existence, when the fears of our fellow citizens have been answered, when the hundreds of thousands have turned into tens of millions, and cannabis consumption has become a part of the fabric of the mainstream of American life, our fellow citizens will finally be open to the call for a science-based policy that they've resisted for decades. It's then, after we've earned their trust, that we ask them to flip the switch to a science-based policy. Instead of recommendations and ID cards for a substance that's safer than over-the-counter drugs that are purchased in pharmacies with no recommendation every day, let adult Americans make their own well-informed health decisions. Let's not force millions of Americans to spend hundreds of dollars on unnecessary medical appointments. Let's not waste limited medical resources on something that doesn't really require them. Let's not continue with an emotion-based policy. Let's move to science. When that principle is accepted and enshrined into law, my friends, my brothers and sisters, we will have achieved the goal that we have fought and struggled for with so much passion for so many years. Adult Americans will have the right to freely grow, possess, and purchase cannabis. A non-corporate system of distribution will have been created that keeps the revenue in our communities, that avoids the mistakes of alcohol and tobacco, that promotes the values of compassion and community service instead of corporate greed and profiteering. And at medical cannabis dispensaries all across the country, we will stop asking for medical ID and we will start asking for adult ID. We will flip the switch at the dispensary door. And all adult Americans will have what hundreds of thousands of Californians have today, legal, safe, affordable access to cannabis. Thank you all very much.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with more thanks for everyone's positive and kind words about my work here at the Daily Audio Stash. I'm really flattered, and it's been amazing to meet all these people that I've been traveling to Boston and Washington, D.C. and to California, people from all over this country who are telling me that they really get a great satisfaction out of listening to the Daily Audio Stash. I had one young man in Boston tell me that he got involved in marijuana legalization activism precisely from listening to my podcast. That's the best compliment an activist could ever hope for, and I thank you very much for it. We're going to be spreading the growing truth about cannabis in many more venues as time goes on. I just recorded a series of 10 factual information interludes for Ponyboy's new album with Los Marihuanos, so check that out, coming soon to a CD store near you. We'll have it here on the Stash when it's available. So once again, thanks all of you for making the Daily Audio Stash the most popular podcast on marijuana law reform in the country. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.